He's Albert Lin, a serial entrepreneur who loves using technology to make life better, and your host for this podcast.
So everybody, I want you to meet Mitch Beck. He's been helping people find jobs since basically he was a kid, and he's had a long run in the radio industry. He's been a professional and successful comedian. And I think
use the word successful, but okay.
Well, no matter what, that background makes you unique, and you've had some tremendous opportunities to gain some perspective and experiences that I think people want to hear about when it comes to executive search and employment. So, Mitch, yeah. It's great to have you on the line.
Oh, I'm thrilled, Al. I'll tell you, we've had quite a battle to make it work, but you know, now that it does, I'm sure the world is going to be excited because they've been waiting on, you know, bated breath.
Yeah, well, you know,
I have to say.
Well, it's always great when technology cooperates so we can actually communicate with people. And, you know, I think most people think about job hunting and their careers as unfortunately kind of serious and depressing work. But one of the things that I think is really great about what you do is you bring a dose of humor to it and a dose of humanity. So I think it's an aspect that's unique on how you conduct yourself. And it really started when you were a kid, right?
Yeah, my mother owned an employment agency, and I made my first placement when I was 13. It was actually kind of funny. My mother went out with all of her staff out to lunch, and I was sitting in the office doing my homework. And this very pretty girl came in, and back in those days, this is 1974, to be a receptionist, basically all that was required was a pretty smile and you know, looking nice when you wear clothing. That was pretty much the qualifications. And this girl came in, she was very pretty and dressed to the nines. And she said, "Can you help me?" And, you know, that just showed you the intellect she had, because I looked about as much like an adult as Daniel Bryan looks like he's a Reagan supporter, you know, so I did not look my age, but she thought I was. And, like a little kid, I'd watched my mother do it enough times. So I had her fill out an application, and I was just looking through the job order book that my mother had. And I saw that Save the Children, the charity, was right across the street from my mother's office, and she had a receptionist opening. So being the fearless kind of person that I was, because I'd already been performing for a couple of years, I just picked up the phone and called. And said, "Listen, I have a very pretty young lady here who's got all the qualifications based upon what you've told my mother." And actually, I said Cookie, which was my mother's name. I wasn't that dumb. And I said, "What you told Cookie?" And she's actually sitting here right now. Can I send her over? And it literally was across the street. And so they said, "Fine, she's across the street. Come on over." She went, she had an interview for like a half an hour. My mother came back from lunch, and they called, and they had already hired her. They offered her the job on the spot. And I had made my first placement. I didn't get paid for it, but that's when you're a kid and you work for my parents.
Yeah, but that's great initiative. You obviously helped her out. She gets a job. But now here's something interesting.
I didn't get a date. And you know, that's the big problem in that scenario.
Well, look, you're 13, and you said, "Look, I was already confident and bold enough to go across the street because I've been performing for a few years." Well, that pretty much means you were performing when your age was in single digits. So tell us about that.
I did my first performance when I was 5, and I entered like the equivalent of an America's Got Talent, but on a local level. And I sang the song, "How Much Wood Could a Woodchuck Chuck If a Woodchuck Could Chuck Wood," which is compelling stuff, you know. And, you know, when you're 5, I kept singing it faster and faster and kept the clarity. And I ended up winning it. My parents didn't even know that I had entered the thing. And I went and did it, and I showed up at home with this big trophy, and they wanted to know what it was from. And, you know, I told them, and, you know, that was the end of that.
But it launched you into a direction of interest that you pursued for, well, a couple of decades, right? I mean, you went into radio and you became a professional comedian.
Yeah, at 13, I was already on the radio. At 16, I was on full time. You know, I'd come right after school and I'd be on the radio.
Yeah. And unlike like today's technology with podcasting and stuff where you can time shift everything, radio back then was super scheduled, super high pressure, especially with timing and everything.
It was local radio, but all of that's true. And it was kind of funny because I would do my homework, you know, while records were playing. So it was a blast. And I'll tell you, I miss it. You know, it's been 20 something years since I've been on regularly. And I miss it. There's not a day that goes by that I don't miss it. Yeah. So that's why I'm doing this with you. I'm reliving my radio days through you.
Well, hey, look, everybody listening to this is probably going to have multiple careers. I mean, that's the reality of everyone living longer, of, you know, the state of how the economy changes and creates jobs that didn't even exist a few years ago. So I think that's kind of the norm now. And, I mean, you're making lots of different career moves, and you're right. Taking what you learned in the past and bringing it to the present. So here you are looking at something that you got a flavor for when you were very, very young, and you're now applying what you learned. So give us some wisdom of what you've learned that applies to anyone who's looking for a job or anyone who's looking to hire. Give us some things that you've picked up along the way that you think is helpful.
Well, the first one I learned was no smoking in bed. That was a big tip. Don't smoke in bed.
Well, hopefully you didn't have to learn that the hard way.
No, I didn't. I didn't have to learn it the hard way, although my face does look like Freddy Krueger, you know, where it's been burned to pieces. So it's very similar. I also learned not to take a wooden nickel. That was very important. I also figured out that you got to be yourself. And whenever you try and be somebody that you're not, it does not end well. And a lot of the times people will come, you know, to me, or they'll go in on an interview and they try and be someone they're not. And, you know, people can be dopey and goofy and whatnot, but that's one thing people pick up upon pretty quickly. And even if you're able to fool them long enough to get the job, you know, you can't keep up the facade forever. And eventually people figure out who you really are. And so I've always advised everybody that's ever walked through here, be yourself. If they don't like you for who you are, you know, screw them. You know, would you rather go someplace and have to be somebody that you're not, or just go someplace where people accept you for who you are? And I wouldn't accept anything less than that. If somebody doesn't like you, they think you're too opinionated, or, you know, got a big mouth. Oh, wait a minute, I'm talking about me. If you're somebody else, you know, you've got to go and you've got to be very corporate, and you're not a very corporate person, well, you're going to be miserable in that job no matter how much it pays. And vice versa, you know, if they're asking you to be less corporate and you're a very corporate individual, that makes you more comfortable, you know, that's the wrong environment. And you got to be smart enough to make the right call, what works for you. At Crossroads Consulting, I've trained all of my recruiters to try and help people be who they are and stop trying to knock square pegs into round holes. You know, as a recruiting firm, we don't make as much money as a lot of other ones do, because a lot of people just want to get bodies out, and they treat you as if you were just, you know, your stock on the shelf. And I don't look at it that way. I never have. Yeah. You know, I'm a very aggressive sales guy when I want to be. I mean, if I was selling you a color TV, you're not leaving without it. But, you know, if you could have saved $50 and gone to Best Buy, well, that's on you, not on me. I haven't changed your life. But in doing what I do, you know, if I knock a square peg into a round hole, that's how you feed yourself, how you take care of your kids, how you plan for your future. You know, all the different things that go forward in your life start with me in that sense. And I feel a level of responsibility to not force people into things they don't want to do. I don't believe in arm twisting or pressure sales or any of that kind of thing. If you don't want to go to a job, then don't go. You know, if you don't want to, you know, you're a company, you don't want to get hired, you know, for the situation, then don't, you know, don't go or don't hire the person. But you got to make sure that you're going to be happy with the decision that you made.
All right. So that, I mean, that's certainly great wisdom. And I think everyone would love to follow that. But of course,
I think you're
most people
stretching your grade a little bit, but okay.
Well, I mean, most people aren't going to spend that much time looking for a job, right? Most people are doing their jobs, and then something comes up.
No, I wouldn't agree with that. I think I think there are a lot more people unemployed than the government would let you know. The current administration changed a lot of the requirements to make themselves look better in terms of what the current status is of unemployment. I think it's a lot higher, and I don't mean a little bit, I mean significantly higher. I think the percentage of people that are long-term unemployed is enormous. And one of the things that you need to do, especially if you're someone who's long-term unemployed, it is very hard to get a job when you've been out for a while. And you got to make sure you're making smart decisions or you're going to wind up unemployed again. And one of the things I'm not afraid to send somebody who's been long-term unemployed somewhere, as long as it makes sense for them and for the company. And like I said, it all comes down to how you see your role. As a recruiter, I believe that I'm here to help somebody. My motto for my company that I started, you know, it's going to be 20 years in September, was putting the human back into human resources. And it's treating people with a certain level of respect and dignity that I just don't think most people get. And I know when I was looking for jobs, which was very frequent because I'm a smartass, in case you haven't noticed, you know, when I was on the radio, I would try and experiment a lot and get fired a lot. And as a result, you learn what's necessary to get a job and what's necessary to get yourself screwed up. And I try and take that experience and I try and share it with people to make sure they're making the right decision for themselves. There's nothing on this planet worse than convincing yourself that a particular job is good for you. And then you get there in 10 minutes and you realize this was a mistake. You know, because now you can't keep making mistakes. When I was a kid and worked for my mother, if you had stayed at a job less than 5 years, that was considered job hopping. You know, if you're doing 4 years here, 2 years there, 4 years, 5 years, that's a job hopper. Now it's like every 3 years or 2 years. And I don't want to see that happen. I have an easier time placing a long-term unemployed person than I do somebody who job hops. And for my own quality control and caring about what I do, I won't send people that are job hoppers to the clients that I have. They expect me to screen people like that out, because they don't want job hoppers. People are looking for somebody that's going to stay a significant period of time. And our planet has changed. And we've gone into this instant gratification. I've been here 3 weeks. How come I haven't been promoted yet? And
isn't that some of the seesaw debate? Certainly, let's say, I mean, it depends on the industry, but in high tech, people are always saying on the hiring side, boy, it's hard to find the right person. When I find that person, they expect me to provide them training and advancement so that they can, you know, be an entrepreneur, leave, whatever. Months.
You know, what's happened is we've lost all sort sense of patience, and people feel entitled, and you're not entitled. You've been given a job. You've been given a good fortune your way, an opportunity.
Yeah. And it's now, what now you would you better. Say that trend is now sort of changing just because millennials represent about half or a little more than half of the workforce?
No, because there's enough people of my generation that are still working and that are in management that have levels of expectation. And I think that a lot of the millennials that are out there are going to have a rude awakening towards how things are going. And I think the sooner people start adjusting to that, you know, if you're tattooed from head to toe with what do they call it, gadgets or whatever, where your ears are pierced open like that, you're not going to get a job at IBM. It's not going to happen. You're not going to get a job unless it's sweeping the floor. You know, you're just not going to get a job there. They still care. Corporate America still cares about certain things. And regardless of who's the one that's doing it, they still care. Now, it may be different, you know, in some of the less professional jobs. I'm speaking strictly from corporate, you know, perspective. You know, if you look like that and you want to go drive a garbage truck, you know, I mean, I'm sure it doesn't make a difference one way whatsoever. Yeah. But if you're looking, you got yourself a degree in finance and you want to go work at some place in New York City on Wall Street and you look like that, good luck. You know, it's not going to happen.
Got it. Now, what about some other advice for people who are thinking about it? They're probably new to the workforce, and here you are telling them some things that are probably a little countercultural. You're right. Telling them don't spend a whole lot of time prepping for these interviews to try to fit into what you think they want. You just yourself, right?
I'm not saying not to prep. I'm saying you'd be insane not to prep. No, what I'm saying is you got to bear in mind that you have to do your research to make sure that the environment is a fit. You know, you want to make sure that, you know, by doing your reading, by doing your research, by making phone calls, that if you're going to XYZ Corp, that the environment there is something that's going to make you comfortable. And hopefully you've done that before you even submitted. But if you haven't, then you need to do that. You need to make sure it's the right fit for you. And unfortunately, and this is something I was just discussing with my staff the other day, it's become way too easy to apply for jobs. When I was a kid, you had to take the time to sit down, do the reading, do the research, put it together a resume, which was not something you just did at home. You had to go get it printed. And you'd have to mail it in an actual envelope, you know, and spend some money to do it. And, you know, you didn't just send out 300 copies. You were very selective and you made sure that it was going to the place that you wanted it to go to. Now, all you do is hit enter. So I get on a regular basis, I get anywhere from 50 to 100 resumes a day that I have to review. And of the 50 to 100, I'm trying to be fair here, maybe 8 to 10 I keep, because that they actually do the job that people are applying for.
All right, so this brings up kind of a new and evolving problem. You're saying it's too easy nowadays to apply for a job. You yourself are getting bombarded 5 to 100 a day. So if you're an employer, what are you going to do? I mean, what are some of the tools you got to start doing practice-wise or technology-wise to find the right guy?
What a lot of companies are doing now are going to people like myself and asking me to go through it because they don't have the time. Because I put up a job not too long ago. I was doing a search for a president of an international mining company. And I got a resume from a kid in Florida who works at the front desk at McDonald's. You know, now for me, I get irritated at that. Now, because to me, you're wasting your time and someone else's time. And you burn bridges because people get annoyed. Now, if I have zero problem with somebody who sees a job for a staff accountant or whatever, or a senior accountant, whatever it is, doesn't make a difference. And they say to me in their note, I know I'm not qualified for this, but I would like you to have my resume in case something comes in or something you see is a fit. That's fine. I have no problem with that. As long as you're telling me up front that you're smart enough to understand you don't do the particular job you sent something in on. But when you're the kid in Florida submitting for a president of a company when you work the desk at McDonald's, that's obnoxious. And I have to go through that often. Companies don't have the time to go through that. And like I said, you burn bridges. Your name gets into their thing as somebody to stay away from. It's better to just apply to stuff you're qualified for.
Certainly nobody wants that kind of a wild mismatch, right?
It's too simple to apply. And, you know, a lot of companies now are going to things where the resume, you got to answer a quiz before you do it, before you can submit it, because they don't want to get bothered. So it's very demanding, and you've got to take your time. And that's part of the problem. Again, it's that instant gratification society that we have right now. And and you just hitting submit and keeping your fingers crossed. When I was a kid, we used to say it was throwing crap against the wall to see if it sticks somewhere. And it's just not smart. And I don't recommend people doing that. I think it's very foolish. Now, if you're that entry-level person and you're looking for a break, say you're a millennial or whatever, don't be looking at management jobs right out of school because you're not going to get them. You have to pay your dues. And you pay your dues by being willing to do anything and work hard. And once people start to recognize that, then opportunities open up and give yourself time. Nobody's going to promote you to president of the company within 3 weeks. It's not going to happen. I would venture to guess probably a third of the resumes that I have when I discuss with people why they're leaving their position is they want, a management job, or they want a more senior position than the one that they have. And I look at how long they're on that job, and they might be there a year. And they're already ready to jump to get something else, and it just doesn't work that way. Now, maybe for some people, they'll point their fingers and say to me, "But Mitch, look at my history. I made five jobs in 5 years and doubled my income and did this, that, and the other thing." Well, bully for you. There's always going to be exceptions to a generalization. But there's a reason that a generalization can have factual, standing on it. Stereotypes are based on facts. They're used in a very disgusting way most of the time. But the fact is, there's certain things that just stick. It's the same exact thing with jobs. When you look at somebody who's leaving a job every year to 18 months because they want something else, well, a potential employer says, "You know what? I'm not going to be able to keep this guy around long enough." And they'll
Now,
skip it and keep looking.
on the hiring side, the employers, here they are trying to find great candidates. They know they're going to be bombarded by the crazy applicants that you point out. So they may hire you and say, "Help me out, help me get through it." But one of the things we talked about in the past is you're like, "Look, I got to help the employer also differentiate themselves from other employers." And one of the things you do is you say, "Look, I try to make a funny ad, or I do some things that are a little unique and different so they stand out." Tell us about that. What are some of the techniques that you can do to help
Well,
the
in
employer?
terms of the company itself, I'm not necessarily trying to make the company look different. I just believe that humor is looking for a job sucks. It's just a constant thrashing to your self-esteem. And it's not for everybody, and it can be very, very demanding and very, very hard and very frustrating. So I've taken the approach of, it would be nice if somebody had a sense of humor about this and along the way could make me chuckle a time or two, while I'm doing this. Because reading ads, if you've ever done it at all, and you go on any of these sites, after about 10 minutes, you want to take a fork and pull your eyeballs out. So, and slowly, but for me, I at least try and make it, stick out. There are so many ads. There's hundreds of millions of them all over the place, but yet mine stick out every single time because they're not so serious. They're silly. My favorite one that I've got on my website now says this particular job has more pressure than the button on Oprah's pants. And I think that's funny. And I think that makes it stick out. It also tells a story, that this is not an easy place to work. And so you get the point across. Now, one of the other things, and I'll turn this isn't what you asked me, but I'll put it out there anyway. One of the things that I'm looking for when I'm doing things is somebody who has a sense of humor. Now, you don't have to be a stand-up comic. You don't have to be a wild and crazy guy or gal. But you need to have some sense of a sense of humor. Now, why? Well, when the crap hits the fan at the company, which it inevitably will, or some crisis comes up, if you are so uptight that you could put coal in your butt and, crap diamonds, nobody is going to want to be around you. you're gonna have a stroke or a heart attack, or you're gonna bring everybody in the room down with you. But if you can maintain your sense of humor in the midst of all of that, and you're not taking yourself so unbelievably seriously, you know, you're easier to be around. You keep the stress at a minimum, and you keep your coworkers at a you know, high level of confidence. And employers now, like
okay,
that.
So from a practical standpoint, how are you implementing that? You and your staff are going out there and screening people who basically have some sense of humor. Is that what you're telling me?
No. Let's say you submitted a resume to me, and I look at it and I think, okay, this guy's got something on the ball. So I'm going to call you up, and I'm just going to be myself, and I'm going to have a conversation that's very similar to the one that we're having right now. And I'm just going to be myself, and I'm going to see how you respond to that. Some people I've talked to over the years get really pissed off and really don't like it because, you know, like I said, they're the ones that have the coal in their butt. I'm not looking for people like that. So if somebody gets that offended, and it's happened, you know, and they get that upset, that's okay with me. And I wish them well, and I just tell them, you know, and I keep professional with them. But that's not somebody I'm going to market. That's not somebody I'm going to send out. Somebody doesn't have to make me laugh, and they don't have to laugh at my jokes. But they do need to have a sense of humor. They do need to not be so uptight. And just so that you understand, and I've been maintaining this for 20 years, people do not hire necessarily the one who is the most qualified. They hire the one they like. And if somebody enjoys being around you, you are much more apt to get a job than you are if somebody doesn't like being around you.
Yeah. And that makes sense. And we hear that time and time again. I think that's totally sensible. But now here you're running a firm. You want to hire people you like. And in prior conversations, when we were just chatting about how you built your firm and found the right people, one of the things you mentioned is, I don't generally like to hire from the industry. So give us some insight in why that is, because most people are like, I want experienced people from my industry, blah, blah, blah. That's the natural go-to pool of candidates, but not for you. Tell me about that.
I think this industry as a whole, to use a joke that I used in my stand-up routine, this industry as a whole has a reputation two steps below a child molester, which, you know, puts it one over a priest. you know, it's just, and if you're Catholic and heard that and you're offended, I apologize. It's just a joke. But the those who did laugh and chuckle at it, it's basically what this business is. The basic concept, when you boil it all down to the most simplistic thing, is you're stealing people. You're taking people from one business and moving them into another for money. You know, if you had done it with furniture, you'd get arrested. You know, but if you do it with people, it's okay. And, you know, I don't want people to come in here and have preconceived notions of, I know how to do this job and I'm going to do it my way and I'm going to say whatever I want to say. I want to teach people the way I'm comfortable with having people talk to, and a certain level of ethical standard and making sure. Now, again, this is a generalization. I'm sure I'm not the only one in the entire industry across the United States that feels this way. But, you know, when you're talking about a generalization, I don't want to hire people from this business. And one of the things I've explained to every recruiter who's ever set foot in here to work for me is, people in this industry, companies do not hire us for somebody that can do something. They're looking for somebody that is doing something. You know, they're not hiring us that you're a staff accountant and you want to be, a salesman someplace. They don't care if you can do it. If you can do it, they can find that on their own. They don't need me for that. But if they're coming through me, they want somebody that is doing it.
Yeah. Well,
when people send in resumes, they got to bear that in mind. When you're applying to a recruiter, they're looking for people that are doing a particular job. And, these days, I'll bring up yet another topic. The country is getting older. And as the country is getting older, we have more and more people in that demographic. And I'm in that demographic. I'm 54 years old. And I'm in that demographic. And, it's very tough to place people in that demographic. It's not easy. It's not impossible, but it's not easy. And that's a separate problem in and of itself. We are taking people that, think about it. I've had conversations, a couple of them in the last couple of weeks, where outsourcing people are telling people that are in my age group, don't put down that you have 30 years of experience. Don't put down, only put down the last 10 years of your experience on the resume. Because I personally, between you and me, and since it's you and I are the only ones listening, that was a little bit of a joke. But since it's just you and me talking, I'll just keep you a secret. I'm sure you can keep a secret.
Lay it on me.
Companies don't want people that do that. When you do that, you are more apt to blow an opportunity than you are if you listed that you have 30 years. What I refer to that as is sticker shock. And they're expecting somebody to come in that's 25 years old or 30 years old, and you're coming in, you're 50. It's just that they're shocked.
Yeah. So you
And
kind of
then you've blown a chance.
blew the expectations that you set, is what you're saying. It's but they aren't they partially doing this, keep it to the last 10 years, just for relevancy and expediency of, hey, the hiring person who's reviewing this just doesn't have the time to get down to what you did in year 15 or 20, much less 30.
Yeah, but you know what? If they're interested, they will. If you keep your resume short, sweet, and to the point, they will. I tell them you need to understand your resume is an advertising piece. It is not your life. And you should have multiple resumes for multiple opportunities. When you're looking at a job, you don't want to lie. Don't ever put lies on there. But it makes sure that the keywords that you see in that ad are all over your resume if that's what you do. A resume is designed to get you an interview, not a job. People have a very difficult time selling themselves. That's one of the biggest problems we have,
Yeah, I totally get
is
that.
getting somebody ready, is getting somebody ready for an interview, because I don't believe in spending a lot of time prepping somebody, because as we spoke of earlier, I don't want somebody to be phony. And if I have over-prepped them and I have spent all this time getting to make sure they say the right things and do the right things, what's going to happen when I'm not there?
Yeah.
You know, the company's going to be calling me and going, this guy was so smooth in the interview, and now he's as rough as sandpaper. You know, I would rather I give people the tools, stuff that I've written, stuff to review. And if they review it, great. I tell them it's smart to review it. And if they don't review it, then they blow the opportunity. Now, most recruiters don't do that. Most recruiters will have somebody come into the office, prep them for 45 minutes as to things they need to know, tell them how to interview and do all that stuff, and then they close more deals that way. I also think they have more fall-offs that way and burn more bridges that way. I personally think that I believe in the individual. And I think if you're a talented person and you're properly prepare yourself, I think you'll do just fine. And if you don't, you didn't deserve the opportunity in the first place.
Well, that I think is a great summary of what it comes down to. That people, if they want to help themselves and they want to get better, they can contact you. If they're listening to the podcast, they can certainly look at the resource pages, see the links on how to get in touch with you. So let's quickly list the kinds of services you can help somebody with if they're looking for a job.
Well, the main thing I can do, I redo resumes for people. We charge only if all I have to do is edit what you have, we only charge $100 for that, which is very cheap. If I have to write it from scratch, that all you have are some notes, that's more, because it takes a lot more of my time to do it. We can prep people for interviews. We charge for that. We charge $100 an hour for that. So if you're not, if you're doing something on your own and you want me to help you prep, you know, we charge $100 an hour for doing that.
Got it.
As you notice, this, it's, I just try and keep it simple.
Yeah, no, I
You know,
love
in
it. It's
terms
very
of hiring
straightforward.
people,
You need it,
in
you pay
terms of,
for it, you don't.
yeah.
Now, what about
Exactly.
if you're a company? You're looking for an employee. You know, one thing
The
you can
one
bring
thing
to the table is.
we do both retain search and contingency work. You know, and it just depends what somebody wants. You know, I tell people all the time, we've placed everything from a dog groomer to a president of an international mining company. It doesn't make a difference. Searching is searching. And, you know, doing our job is what we do best. And, you know, finding good quality people, we care about that. You know,
And that's.
I've been telling companies for years, I'd rather send you nobody and you know that I'm not wasting your time than to send you a ton of resumes where you tell me to leave you alone that I'm annoying you.
Hey, I love
So
it. I think that
I
makes a
so,
lot of sense.
well, I have clients. I have a couple of clients that it is their corporate policy not to work with recruiters, but they work with me because I won't waste their time. And I have a couple that I've been dealing with for like 18 years, I've never made a placement with. But they still throw me everything because they know if I don't have it, I won't send them. And you know, and it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, well,
You
it
know,
comes down to
I just
you're
want to work with
focused and
people.
thoughtful and looking at a level of quality that basically is diametrically opposed for those that just think it's a numbers game. And there are
Right. Well, I'll
those
tell you
who are out
something.
there.
I'll tell you something funny that we can close on that's kind of interesting. You can go on YouTube and find it someplace. There used to be a commercial when I was a kid, and the thing, I think it was for a union, and it used to be, are you proud enough of whatever it is that you're doing that you would be willing to sign your name to it? And they showed a person walking with a tire, and the tire had the person's autograph on it. You know, somebody's handing out a pie and it's got a thing written on it. I've always looked at it that way with my company. Is am I, you know, the people that I'm sending out, am I proud enough that I would put my name on it? And, you know, and stand behind and say, yep, this is the person that I sent and that I believe in. And, you know, that's a level of quality that when you were just talking about numbers places, people that only concern themselves with numbers, they don't really care about that. Just get your numbers, get your 15 send outs a month, you know, or get your whatever. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in placing people where, you know, I have a couple of people that I've placed that have been at those companies for 10 and 15 years.
That's
And, you know,
great.
and have risen up through the ranks from where I sent them to where they are now.
Well,
And I'm proud of
if
them.
you have a client that you placed and they've been there for 15 years, I think that's something you can happily sign your name to.
And I'm proud of that. You know, and you know, that's what I take a lot of pride in and what I'm doing is having people that are terrific, that are good people, that are going to benefit, you know, companies and have them make money and be glad that they paid me for what I did. You know, and that's the bottom line. And if I can make them laugh along the way, all the that much better.
No, that's fantastic. Well, Mitch, I thank you for sharing some of your thoughts. And next time, we're going to talk about how you're going to get rid of the government's need to have an unemployment agency. That's going to be
There you go.
fascinating.
Yeah,
All
that'll be a
right.
fun one. So,
I
whenever you're
bet.
ready to do that, you let me know. I'd be happy to join you and your wonderful audience.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. We'll be talking to you soon.
All right, bud. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
If you need the links and proper spelling for the people and places in this podcast, check out our resources page or send an email to chase@careers.org.